I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Joe Branton.
Yes?
Do you want to save the world?
Always.
And do you want to save the world of electric guitars?
Absolutely.
Well, guess what? The world of electric guitars is in trouble, according to the Washington Post. This week, they published the article, "While My Guitar Gently Weeps, the secret slow death of the electric six string."
Holy cow.
Indeed. Do you want to save the world with me?
Of course.
Well, you can do. Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where this week we talk about how to save the electric guitar market and what we as guitar nerds can do about it. If you want to join us on this mission, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $5 a month gets you access to the extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, plus access to the interviews that Matt does with pedal builders from around the world and the Joe Branton Rant On, the mini-series where Joe talks about things that he... Wait, is it loves or hates?
Hates.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Things that he hates. $10 a month gets your name read out on the extra special end of the Guitar Nerds podcast like the absolute superstar you are. Joe Branton, do you want to save the world?
Yes!
Patreon.com/guitar nerds.
Woo!
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay, breathes into his microphone loudly, Cross.
No, I don't.
And everyone's favourite internet clown, Joe Branton.
Hola, amigos.
God, that was so loud.
That wasn't loud.
I'm glad I'm not wearing headphones today.
Sorry if I've broken your headphones. Joe Branton back after an
absolute...
What, 4 weeks?
3 weeks.
Three?
Fool.
See, it seems like longer.
No, it seems like no time at all.
Exactly. I could have been here literally every week.
It doesn't seem long enough to the sort of normal rota of time. Well, some of us aren't limited by our timetable. Some of us are a bit flexible.
Well, not me.
Inflexible, that's how I'd describe you. And thanks for joining us again this week. It's always good to have you on board for another exciting Guitar Nerds podcast.
But we're still not full capacity.
Still not full. Matt is out this week. Matt is on holiday somewhere?
I didn't realise he was on holiday, but I called him earlier and he was like, "I've just got off a plane in Italy."
Oh, right.
And so, I guess...
Why did you call him?
Because there have been some new Boss releases and someone was asking me about whether or not you could assign reverb to the expression pedal on a particular unit that we're going to talk about later, and I was trying to find out
the answer. What was the answer?
Yes, you can, which has made me really excited about the product we're going
to
talk about.
Good. Well, we'll get around to that shortly. Joe Branton, do you want to talk about your absence for the last 3 weeks? You've been out doing... I guess you've been recording stuff.
Yes, I have. I spent 2 weeks in a recording studio recording a Prog Odyssey.
God.
Oh, yeah. A double album. And it came in at 83 minutes.
That's ridiculous.
But that's before we've added all the hydrophone and binaural.
I don't even know what a hydrophone is.
Field recordings. A hydrophone's like an underwater microphone. So
right, makes sense.
It's like a microphone that you can have like water shifting in. So it's...
Are you going to do that thing where you are under the water and someone else is also under the water and you like sing a song? And
is it going to be like...
Yeah, I mean it's not like that now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, we did. We're doing some hydrophone stuff, which is pretty cool. And we've still got to do all these binaural things. I've bought a recording of someone walking towards the Blue Mosque in Marrakesh during the call to prayer, so that you've got that wonderful like chant that they do, the call to prayer at the Blue Mosque, which is amplified throughout the entire town.
What do you mean you've bought it?
A blog that I subscribe to, they do like binaural recordings all around the world.
Oh, right, okay.
And binaural, are we all au fait with binaural, with the concept of binaural?
I mean, I think we probably are working in the field that we work in. Oh, but I mean, you might. Why don't you explain it?
So it's essentially a set of microphones that are the correct, you could probably explain it better than me actually, which are kind of the correct distance apart for to represent human ears.
That's
either
correct.
Side of your head.
So it's the most obvious time that people have seen is when they see a binaural head, which is basically a mannequin's head that has been fitted with microphones kind of inside the ears to replicate that experience, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are, when people are using them in professional capacity, you don't normally have the head because it's quite weird to go probably walking towards the Blue Mosque with a, with some sort of weird
head
mannequin
of
head.
Like, yeah, Al Snow.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What does everybody want? So you bought that for your record.
So this guy goes around and gets recordings in loads of interesting places. And our album, because this is a prog odyssey and it's very, very pretentious, it's to do with the Houses of Wisdom, which were something that appeared in Baghdad in sort of the 12th century. Well, the 12th century is the last century that they were there. And it was these Houses of Wisdom were places where there were loads of mathematics, history, language, all different religions, all sort of like giant libraries. And when Genghis Khan and the Mongolians invaded, they destroyed the Houses of Wisdom and they took all the manuscripts and put them in the River Tigris, and there was so many manuscripts lost, so many things destroyed, that the river ran black with ink is the sort of story behind it. And I thought it was such a cool story that we did an album on it. So
classic pop music about cars and girls,
of course,
then.
Yeah, exactly. Just, yeah.
Always the usual.
Yeah, pretty lightweight stuff, really. But
good.
Yeah, so it was great. We're a three-piece, sort of guitar, bass and drums. We added we hired in a Mellotron again, so we had Mellotron. We had quite a lot of organ.
How much did it cost to hire a Mellotron?
It was like £200 for the day, so
okay.
Which I think was quite mates ratesy.
Okay.
So
who do you know that owns a Mellotron?
Our drummer works for an equipment hire company.
Oh right, okay.
But yeah, so we had some of that Mellotron organ. We had a lot of additional percussion. We had like a little separate percussion set made up, and we got a sax player in for the bulk of the record as well.
Of course.
So it was full of prog. But more importantly, and I guess to the point of tying in this podcast to that, we did do a shed ton of cool things with guitars and with bass as well.
I have a question. We'll dive into it. First, we'll dive into it in a minute. How are you going to recreate this live?
We just
play the old stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. We said for the release tour in November, we are going to tour with a sax player, an organ player, and a second drummer.
A second drummer?
Well, a percussionist, you know.
Right, okay.
Not a full kit. So, yeah, we will.
You've really gone full Phil Collins, haven't you?
Full Phil Collins, yeah. Yeah, this is absolutely super, super Phil Collins.
It's sort of that setup of having, like, a sax player and, like, someone doing percussion as well as your drummer and a keyboard player is actually less Phil Collins and a little bit more Huey Lewis in the News,
right,
which is
great.
Where I'd like to see your music go right, in the future.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, we like to think of ourselves as the prog Kenny G.
Good. Isn't Kenny G the prog Kenny G?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Prog, Huey Lewis.
Yeah,
I think
fine.
That's where you go.
That would do.
I think you're moving back to the binaural side of things.
Uh-huh.
I think you're sort of getting into it at the right time, because I've been reading that like the BBC are doing quite a lot of investigating into it because they know that so many people nowadays are watching like their shows and stuff or with headphones.
Right.
They're trying to make it a bit more of a, I think, a bit more of a headphone-y experience.
Oh, that's so cool.
There was an episode of Doctor Who in this season from about a month ago that was filmed completely with, I don't think it was filmed binaurally. I think they did it in post.
Right.
But the episode is all about, it's set in like a haunted house, and there's lots of knocking on wooden walls and ceilings and stuff.
Which of course you won't notice if you're just watching through
completely.
It
yeah, I watched
doesn't
it on
affect
the
your
absolutely
experience.
Not. But I read about it afterwards, and I'd really like to go back and rewatch it. But it's something that apparently they're really looking into. But at the moment, it's just not.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense for them to put a huge amount of effort because it costs so much more money.
Of course, yeah.
To render everything into it later. But I think it will be the way, you know, because the technology is there now.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't cost, I guess, on your level, on this level.
Well,
you know,
I paid £20 for that.
Well, completely, you know, but it's the sort of thing that where that tech is becoming a bit more available.
Yeah.
And I can fully see it becoming the norm.
I thought it was actually loads of fun because I was just doing a little bit of research. You know, I just wanted some like field recordings, some sort of found sound in a couple of places. So I thought I'd check out a couple of. I was led to this website called like Free Sound or something like that that I was suggested. And,
yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. And I didn't even know anything about binaural. I learnt about it through that site and sort of reading stuff on it, and then I got really into the concept. And there's tons of really interesting stuff. I think I spent just hours listening to random samples of like marketplaces and you know just different things like that. It's cool. It's totally cool. I'm into it.
Shall we talk about some guitar stuff? Because
yeah,
as you know, as cool as it is to talk about binaural heads and stuff like that, it's probably not what people have tuned in for.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about some guitar stuff.
So go on then. What did what was being used on the record?
So we did something different for bass this time. Something quite guitar-y for bass this time.
Did you use a guitar?
I used a guitar amp. Used an AC-15.
Nice.
So all of my stuff was recorded through my Ashdown ABM-600 into a 15-inch cab, and that was mic'd up as usual with a handful of various mics. And then we did we re-amped any big bits going through a Earthquaker Devices terminal fuzz into a Vox AC-15. Actually, originally a Fender Champ, but like halfway through a reamp,
you blew up, didn't
noise
you?
Stopped coming, and it was, we had the amp set up in like a booth behind us, and I was like, oh, maybe this terminal's the electroharmonic, sorry, the Earthquaker Devices pedal had broken. I was like, oh, it just sort of cut out, it's not coming through the monitors. And we were like, maybe the pedal's gone, and then sort of looked at the booth with, you know, like a French door, start sliding door thing going across it, and we could just see smoke filled up inside. So the thing had caught fire. So there is a level control on the terminal, and it does tell you that 9 o'clock is unity.
Okay.
And I think I had it like cranked.
Whose amp did you blow up, basically?
Well, it was the studio's.
Right.
So, yeah, that was fine. So, moved to an AC-15 and it was great.
Blew that up as well.
Well, no, it dealt with it. But it was really good to kind of put back in those like high mid frequencies that you're missing a lot in, especially in like driven bass. It was, really good. I had a really good time. And guitar-wise, we used... whilst the guitarist in my band plays rocker Orange Rocker 30s,
yeah,
normally, they're just too trebly, like too...
Really?
Yeah, like there's too much. They're just not... They don't sound great on record, where his one doesn't anyway.
Okay.
His one has been completely rebuilt from scratch, so it's not really an Orange...
Yeah,
on
yeah.
the inside. So I'm sure the Rocker 30s are great. It still does sound good for recording. But he recorded through a few things. Drive was dealt with by a Cornford Roadhouse 30.
Yep.
Which
You've used that last time, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Like it belongs to the studio that we rehearsed.
Oh, okay.
It's so good. I've been looking around for one since, because it's like it's the second or third album we've done with that amp now, and it's just like, we just need to buy this. They're so good, and they were so affordable, but they're discontinued now, the Cornford series. They were still UK made, but
yeah,
they were like a budget range by Cornford. They're a great brand that are just not shouted about enough.
Yeah, I don't know how budget they were, though. I think all the Cornford stuff was...
$699. That's pretty
okay.
Budget for Cornford.
Yeah, for what you get, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
But drive through that, super drive through a high watt, high gain 50.
Yep, that'll do it.
Yeah, that absolute killer. And I've been looking around for those as well, and I saw some going for like 350, 400 quid.
Really?
And they're the UK made ones, the high gains. So.
Yeah, and all, no, are they?
Yeah.
You sure about that?
Mm, pretty sure.
You might want to check that. I'm not sure that's true.
I'm pretty sure everything was UK made except for the solid state range that they had.
Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, Superdrive for that, and all the cleans through a jazz chorus, an old 70s one that was there. So Matt Knight popped in,
of course he did,
halfway through to
the jazz chorus. A bat signal went up,
yeah.
JC symbol, and he was like, I have to get there.
He was telling us that there was something about the chorus circuit that's different and a million times better in the old 70s
ones.
I doubt he'd say that on here.
Yeah, now he's like, yeah, new one's better, mate, just get the new one. Yeah, now he has talked about that on the podcast before, how they've made changes to how that works.
It just sounded great, and actually Tim, our guitarist, has come out of that being like, I think I need a jazz chorus.
Yes,
I think Tim's going to move to a 3-amp setup live so that he's got clean drive and octave,
just making your tour actually impossible.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You've doubled the amount of band members and you've got and a third extra guitar amps.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it was good. Like effects wise, it was relatively light on the ground. My Boss VB2W broke.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is not a great effort for Boss. No, soon as Matt goes away.
Yeah, but it is great. It's like the cornerstone of my whole sound. So I had to finish the record on the vibrato simulator or emulator on the Line 6 M9. Which is actually really good.
Probably sounds real good.
So basically, what we've always suggested, which is have an M5 there ready to go.
Yeah.
Came through for you.
Yeah, absolutely did. Absolutely did. That was really good. And we ended up using the ring mod off of the M9 as well for some weird stuff. It was pretty cool. But yeah, sort of relatively light. I tell you what is on every single song for guitar. The electric death pedals, Comedian.
Oh, yeah, the Coq Noir.
Yeah, the Coq Noir. Everything.
Really?
It makes everything so brittle.
Did you move it at all, or is it the same? The wire in the same position?
Different frequencies. So our producer, who's like a full like prog producer, he was like, I want to save time because it's a double album. I want to save time because last time we did tracks that had like 200 guitars on them. And he was like, I want to save time, but instead of doing that, what we're going to do is I'm going to get a parametric EQ and I'm going to reamp your guitar, boosting individual signals just so that I can create sort of it make it fuller via that. And as soon as we cracked out the Comedian, he was like, oh, that'll do
the job.
So we've just got the Comedian layered guitars but reamped on the Comedian in loads of different
That's cool.
That's really interesting, because you could recreate that live. Let's say you had a 2-amp setup, you could just AB and then have one of them going out to the Comedian and just EQ that differently to how you have your regular sound.
That pedal is absolutely brilliant. Unfortunately, that pedal also broke.
Is there anything that you used that you didn't break?
No, but I did order a new one from Electric Death during the... He said, unfortunately, he has to order the part, the circuit from the States. So,
right, okay.
So I've got to wait for it, but we sort of managed... We took it apart and like fiddled with it and managed to get it to sort of work again if we held it in a certain way. So that was that we got through the record.
I think you need to get to the point where you talk about that pedal enough that you get your own signature model.
I mean, it's already named after him.
The Bow Median.
Yes, the Bow Median. Yes.
I also, we used your favourite pedal a lot.
Yeah.
The
RE20.
The RE20.
Mm-hmm.
There is a video on the Polymath Facebook of us recording a cowbell solo through an RE20. Yeah, it's great, but it's brilliant because I'm manipulating the RE20 and our drummer's hitting the cowbell into a mic in the other room, and I managed to like sort of sample it in, build it up, and then like drop, like just as the track drops,
the oscillations
I'm
and
like,
stuff. Yeah.
Getting the that was great. And we also used the RE20 loads on the sax. So we had our producer manipulating the RE20 whilst the sax guy was going on. And we had the Boss DM2W there. We had a Carbon Copy. We had the Source Audio Nemesis delay. And we pretty much ended up using the RE20 on everything.
It's the best sounding. It really is.
Really good.
Oh, I'm not so sure about that.
It's amazing. I love it. I really do. I mean, obviously I do. I talk about it enough.
Yeah, yeah.
But
one thing that we haven't talked about, did the Stonefield get used on all the tracks?
Every single one, yeah.
With nothing else, no other base.
No other bases. I brought a couple of other things down, and yeah, I just used the Stonefield across the board. It sounded really good. What was cool is, you know, it's got those 12 mid shifts that you can do.
Of course.
But you know, it's all cut because it's passive, but I can cut the bass, which is unusual. Perfect for like when we were doing some double up bits, because of course I was kind of like, I'll get Stonefield to make me a custom one as well, like when I've finished paying for this one. But they will, I'd get rid of like the whole circuit,
yeah,
and just have it like a simple sort of just volume,
cause just a P bass, basically.
Don't use any tone, so it's fine. But in recording, I was like cutting all the bass and running it through a fuzz, like bassless. And
you're turning into one of those guys who's got, yeah, I've got two custom basses, one for the stewed and one for the old road, baby.
Yeah, maybe.
You're going to be that guy.
Possibly. But the Stonefield was absolutely excellent. I had best time recording with it.
And for guitar, Tellies, Hagstrom?
Mostly a Hagstrom. Split between the Hagstrom Swede and Tim's SG Junior. So he has 12s on the Hagstrom and 13s on the SG Junior. So he uses the SG, but the action on the SG is massive. So,
I bet.
So he uses the SG for like big bits and would use the Hagstrom for intricate stuff.
Interesting. One other thing that happened this week is Pedal of the Week was firmly back on the Guitar Nerds YouTube channel.
Yeah, I finally got round to actually editing it.
You did, finally, after a lot of poking.
Oh my God, I was trying to edit whilst I was in the studio, but I was mostly very, very drunk.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm glad you actually took your time, because I can't imagine what the edit would have been like after you've had 8 hours of studio time and 12 pints.
8 hours.
Okay, fine. 12 hours of studio time and 20 pints.
Yeah.
The Dry Bell effects. You'd have to remind me what the pedal's called.
It's called the Vibe Machine.
Vibe Machine.
Oh my God, what an absolutely fantastic pedal.
Yes, it sounds so good. For those who don't know, it's a vibrato pedal.
Well, it's a vibe pedal.
Yeah.
And I think vibe is different from vibrato. It's got vibrato and chorus on there, but in the way that we would all think of vibrato and chorus in a modern sense, you know, if you're looking for a chorus pedal, this is not a chorus pedal.
Yeah.
It's a vibe pedal. It's like the Univibe. It claims to be the world's smallest Univibe pedal, because of course Univibes are traditionally quite large.
Yeah.
But great. Two very easy to use rotaries that have maximum like impact on the sort of tonal range, and then six trim pots around the side where you can switch up everything from like the internal gain to the actual range that the effect goes from and to. So I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I wouldn't even change anything on it. I just thought it was perfect. And you can buy the little a little additional switch which allows you to access presets on it.
Yeah, well, it's like jump between two speeds, isn't it, basically, like you would find on a normal Leslie simulator pedal. I was impressed just how kind of it had so much depth to the sound, which I think is, because it's not a cheap pedal, is it? What, £299?
It's a chunk
maybe
of money,
more than that. Maybe it's $399.
I think it's $299.
Yeah, maybe it's $299, I can't remember, but do look it up on the Dry Bell site.
Satellite.
Yeah, that'd be good. It's not a cheap pedal, but it sounds so much richer than most kind of Vibe and Leslie style pedals.
Yeah.
You're saying $299?
I was agreeing with you.
Oh,
then.
Sorry. I mean, you've got to spend serious money, I think, to get something that sounds that good. I don't know if you remember the Hughes and Kettner rotary simulator they did.
Yeah.
Again, that was like over £300, I think.
Okay, it is actually, in euros, it is £345.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was over £300. So, yeah, so do check it out, Pedal of the Week over on the Guitar Nerds YouTube.
Brilliant pedal. Really came into its own when we paired it with the Pelotor Noiseworks.
Yes.
Pelotor.
And one of the comments on the video actually was, oh, it's good to hear someone demo a Vibe pedal with clean and some fuzz, because normally it's, oh, here's the pedal, and they just play it clean, and you've got no idea like how it reacts. Well, yeah, and also like how much definition you'll lose by running fuzz in the front end.
Yeah,
and obviously, you know that we love the Pelotor and we love that fuzz, and hearing it with...
I love that fuzz.
Yeah, it's the best.
Did you see that Juan Odre actually did some almost exactly the same thing this week as well?
Oh, really?
He has one as well, the Pelotor fuzz, and he uploaded a video of him playing the Pelotor fuzz going into the Boss VB...
Oh, really?
TW, okay, which, yeah. And getting like a really similar sort of range of sounds to what we were doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The... Yeah, the Pelotor is something else. But yeah, I think that was the cool thing. It was that it kind of held with that definition, didn't lose any bass end and stuff when you put the fuzz in front of it.
Yeah.
It was super nice.
Yeah, yes.
Other things that are super nice are the brand new products that are released in...
New Daughters.
Good to have you back. It's been a struggle, hasn't it, to do the news?
Did anyone attempt the...
Jay's been doing it every week.
Go on, Jay.
No, I don't like doing it because it's not something that... And I don't like that I keep getting put on the spot to do it.
Come on, because, one more time.
No, absolutely
one
not.
One last time.
It's not something that I'm good at, because listen to how high my voice is at the best of times.
You could probably get quite low.
No, absolutely not. And you wouldn't have listened, because I know you wouldn't have listened. Rough. But actually, I called Mark's bluff and made him... give it a go last week.
I can't really? Do it. I've got
and
bad
sounded,
throat this
and it
week.
Sounded even worse than my attempt.
Wow.
So.
No.
Rubbish.
That's okay. You need to get more projection in there.
Newts.
Oh, that was better. That was better.
Newts.
You look like the Phantom of the Opera.
Come on.
No.
This is great radio.
What I'm going to do is when I listen back to this, I'm going to
even the seagulls are having a go.
I'm going to listen to you do that and then speed it up and see if it just sounds like normal.
News. Anyway, so loads of stuff to talk about in the news this week.
Oh my goodness, so
first,
much stuff.
First up, a big new product launch. Seemingly out of nowhere from our good friends over at Boss. Four new products. GT1B bass processor, the RV500 reverb, the MD500 modulation, and the Katana mini guitar amp. Joe Branton, give us the lowdown, the fun down.
Absolutely.
The pun
well,
down, the
listeners,
rundown.
If you're on our Facebook group, then I'm sure you'll have had plenty of conversation about this already, because there were a number of threads going about this, but yeah, what absolutely brilliant product. So I was really excited about the GT1B. I have to say, I was considerably annoyed with Matt Knight for not telling us about that.
This is
people, not even cheekily. Not,
people think
not like that, under the radar.
People think that we get like the inside track on this stuff. He's so closely guarded about
we
the
didn't,
news.
We didn't know. We didn't know about any of this stuff, and we have been sort of prying it. We sort of do pry every now and again, and we're saying like, okay, come on, we've seen the DD500. Surely there's an RV coming, and probably
a modulation
one. And he's just, well, yeah. We didn't know about any of this.
No, yeah. Exactly. One, I was annoyed he didn't tell me. Two, I was annoyed that he didn't get me to do the video. And three, I was annoyed at how absolutely pony the music is in the video advert.
Oh, come on.
Oh, who is it? Pony. I don't know. It's just a bass player playing with a drummer, but it's like the drums are electronic and they're the worst sounding like Lin drum electronic sound I've ever heard. But in the video, the guy's on a
just hammering
acoustic
it.
Kit sort of thing.
Okay.
It's just stupid. It's rubbish. Anyway, the GT1B is absolutely brilliant. And I did kind of accidentally actually get a heads up on the MD500.
Did you now?
So first off, it two things happened.
That's one embargo that you've actually managed to keep.
I did keep. Well, I wasn't on the podcast.
That's true.
But one was when I went to do the Bo Banton video.
Yeah.
And we were plugging in the whole board. They had the delay one. What's it called? What do they call it?
DD500.
The DD500, yeah. They had the DD500 and they were turning everything on. And I was looking at the screen and I was like, vibrato? And they had a DD500 that they'd loaded up with the MD500's software.
Oh, right.
So,
okay.
So I guess it was like a super prototype.
Oh, okay.
That
they had
on
the
board. So that was pretty weird.
Yeah, yeah.
That was quite cool.
Yeah,
so I then pried about that. But then because I pried, that's why Matt had come down to the studio that day. He came to give me and Tim the 500 so that we could put them on the Polymath record.
Ah, so you did know about this long before any of us.
Ah, unbelievable. Exactly,
so
yeah.
The GT1B,
yes, anyway,
do you want to give us a quick rundown of
so
what
it'll do? GT1B is obviously the base version of the GT1, but it kind of, I think it's important to reiterate that I guess the GT1's become pretty standard, or maybe I didn't care about the GT1, so I didn't really read about it much. I can't believe how good it is.
Yeah.
Like, how versatile it is. Like, even this is the pedal I was talking about at the start that was finding out if you could assign. You can assign anything to the expression pedal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That makes it the most versatile pedal ever. If you can assign anything to the expression.
It is good, and they're not a huge amount of money, are they, from what I can remember?
No, exactly, like sub 200 quid.
Yeah.
I don't have a price in front of me.
I think it's, you know, it's good basic multi-effects. You know, they're few and far between, and it tends to be that with companies like Boss, they get updated so rarely. Yeah. You know, I think you probably skipped... there's probably not going to be an MS3B.
No. What?
You know,
the MS3 has got bass on it.
Yeah, yeah, sure, but it's not like a dedicated bass multi effects. And they haven't done another one for a while, have they? Probably, was there an ME80B or was it
ME70B? No, they never did that. No, the last bass one was the 50.
Was there not a 70B?
No.
There was
really?
Only the last one was the 50,
okay,
which I have.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cool. So this is probably, you know, it's a welcome update to the Boss range.
Exactly. So the GT... the GT range, as I guess listeners, you'll know if you know about the GT1, it's a step away from where, well, it's part of the GT range, not the ME range,
yeah,
for a start, which basically means rather than having rotary controls to deal with all the different effects, you are dealing with a digital screen and flicking through controls. But one thing Boss have got very, very good at is making a very small and simple screen very intuitive,
yes,
and making the ability to hop around effects easy. So whilst you know, no effect pedal like this will ever be plug and play, I think this is a perfect tool for new players and for people sort of who are using it at home. I think it's very affordable. Boss have made it affordable by making it plastic, by cutting corners on that side of things. You know, they're plastic switches.
Also worth mentioning something that they're kind of or something that they were going on about a lot when the GT1 came out is that it will fit into the front pocket of a gig bag.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're doing gigs on the move and you need multi effects, and it's got line outs and stuff on there as well. So if you were just, you know, going to plug it straight into a PA or something, put that in your gig bag, job done.
And because all the effects are digital, so they're essentially the same things that you're getting on the £450 or £399 MS3, that makes this a, you know, really good value for money. It's certainly...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If I was still working in a guitar shop, I think both the GT1 and the GT1B have blown all the competition out of the water. I don't know why you'd go for anything else now.
Yeah, yeah.
This has everything on it.
There's been a lot of competition at that price point, hasn't there, with the Zoom stuff, and Digitech, I think, did some nice bass multi-effects.
I mean, I have to say, I'm still, you know, saying GT1 and GT1B at the moment. That's because the Moor Red Truck hasn't quite hit the shops yet.
The Red Truck?
No, we spoke about this a while ago.
Did we talk about the Red Truck?
I remember the name. I can't remember what it is.
Oh, my.
Bass multi-effects.
No, mate. Well, guitar, but, you know, I'm sure I can use it. It's a rotary-controlled multi-effects unit that looks kind of like a truck. Like the head of a truck and the
that sounds
body of a truck.
Ridiculous.
With loads of little foot switches on it, maybe five or six like foot pedals on it, including a tuner. I think the tuner is the head of the truck. I think the tuner window is the window in the truck.
Maybe we haven't talked about this.
No, we definitely have. I don't think we've talked about this.
Mate,
I remember the name.
I am so excited about this. So you know the tiny control knobs that they put? They always have one large control and then two little ones on the single foot switches. So this is, all of the switches are those little ones, but there are loads of them. And then about five or six foot switches. So this thing is going to be like, you know, your forearm in length sort of thing, and pretty skinny, but it's loaded up with like modulations, delays, drives, a preamp, and a tuner. Like, this is everything anyone's ever going to need, made by Moore, and we know Moore make great stuff.
Will it sound as good as the GT1B though?
I mean
it'll be half the price.
I mean, yeah, and it'll be made of metal.
Well, so, is it made of metal?
Well, yeah, well, sure.
It's a red truck.
Trucks are made of metal.
Name one plastic truck.
Yeah, idiot.
Derek.
Yeah, Derek trucks made out of plastic.
But yeah, that is exciting. Oh, I've just kind of stolen.
You have. You've
boss's could, thunder
you,
there.
Well, yeah, you have. But what we should say is that some thunder that boss have stolen is in the high-end multi-reverb and multi-modulation pedals.
I have to say, being on all the sales forums, how many Strymans have you seen like going up for sale?
Straight away.
You see Moog is selling his.
Yeah, straight away. And
I tell you what, it really is. This feels like a place that we've been building up to over the last few years, I think, with the, you know, starting with the Boss Wazzacraft pedals. And, you know, all of a sudden, people who maybe wouldn't have looked at Boss 5 years ago start saying, okay, this is quite cool.
Yeah.
And now to see that loads of Strymon pedals are starting to disappear from people's board. And, you know, Pedal Boards of Doom, one of the worst places on the internet in terms of, you know, just how you can't slip before 100 people just attack you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone saying, oh, amazing, can't wait. These look fantastic. I just think it's so strange how things have turned around.
Well, it's down to, there's a few things at play. I think, firstly, the reception of the DD500 has been fantastic.
Yes.
And that's why these are eagerly anticipated. But secondly, Boss are finally paying attention to what else is in the market.
Completely.
You've only got to go back, what, 7 or 8 years, and you look at the lineup and it's like,
oh, the feedbacker.
Well, not even that, but like the Dynadrive the Metalcore. When they've not looked at other pedals, they've just kind of gone, yeah, we've got this new bit of tech that can do this. In the case of the Dynadrive, let's put it in a pedal and put it out there. And of course, everyone went, well, yeah, the reason this doesn't exist already is because no one wants this.
No.
Whereas this, you know, starting from the Wazzacraft pedals, Wazzacraft, it looks like more they've gone, see what's on eBay essentially, and see like how much their pedals are going for, what the demand is for the vibrato and the other Wazzacrafts. With this, they've gone, Strymon are doing all right, aren't they? We should probably get in there and steal some of that business back to Boss.
Well, yeah. I think effect pedals in general, over the last sort of decade have taken a shift from being sort of this like quirky thing that like that long-haired sort of prog guys will have like boards full of, like, to being kind of like a premium thing.
Yeah.
Like, premium players, like your average wedding band now will have a
Big Sky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's become sort of a high-end thing. But anyway, yeah, so Boss have introduced, to go along with the DD500, the RV500 and the MD500. So the RV500, their answer to, what's the Strymon equivalent?
I'm not sure that's
how they want to put it, but we're independent.
Well, for sure, yeah, the Big Sky, yes, yeah. And the Mobius is the
yeah, that's right, yeah. So
the modulation. The other thing that's interesting, and I think kind of slipped under the radar, which was announced at the same time, is the editor for all three, including the DD500.
Yeah.
You can now edit, the editors are all there and up and ready to go. So,
which is great. They've managed to do that before they put the MS3 editor out, so I'm still sort of stuck flicking through this tiny screen. But I'm sure it'll come soon. But yeah, the RV500, which is 12 different reverbs, 21 new algorithms, and I mean, it's you know, it's an all singing, all dancing reverb, isn't it? It's going to do everything that everyone's wanted from a reverb for ages. And the MD500, which is obviously their answer to modulation.
Have we got a list of what modulations are on there?
28 algorithms.
Wow, there we go.
I don't have a list in front of me.
You would imagine it would be the usual suspects.
Yeah, so it's got authentic sonic recreations of vintage classics like the CE1. I mean, you could just buy a CE1. The Roland Dimension
no,
D.
You couldn't.
The Roland Dimension D. Yeah, well, you can. See, there's that reissue, isn't there?
No. CH1.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the regular chorus and CE5. Course, yeah.
The Roland Dimension D, which alone is worth it. One of the coolest pedals ever. 70s script phase, 80s tri-chorus, and numerous others. I love that, like, the few that they've mentioned are all, like, £50 pedals.
Well, not really, because they're going after the vintage stuff.
Of course, of course. But, yeah, totally wicked. An A-B simulation mode. Well, the MD500 is just... I mean, I don't know, man. I still kind of like having separate mod pedals.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that gives you a lot more variety, but these seem to be super high quality. It's all in one box. It's MIDI controllable. You know, it's kind of...
mounted jacks and all that.
For all the reasons that people buy the DD500, this is just filling out the rest of your pedal board, basically. And I think it's safe to say that they're probably going to be... Unless they sound terrible, which from the demos... doesn't sound like they do. I think these are going to be quite the hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
One last product from Boss, the
we're not going to talk about it. Yeah,
Mini.
Some tiny amp that no one cares about. I'm sure Matt's going to bang on about it on every podcast for the rest
of the
year.
Well, he's not back for a couple of weeks, so maybe we should talk about it briefly now.
Whatever, they've made a small amp that's for your table. Apparently it sounds better than other small amps for your table.
I love that you, I love that you hate this stuff.
I don't care about these. Who has this? Like, who... who buys these tiny amps?
Well, I think plenty of people on our forum have already ordered them.
Why? Why? Just use an ordinary amp in your house.
Yeah, but some people, that's
some
too
people
big.
Are conscientious about their neighbours.
Turn it down a little bit.
Like, yeah, but then amps sound rubbish when you turn them down.
No, my AC10 sounds fine at low volumes.
No, it definitely doesn't. It sounds really broken.
No, it doesn't sound broken anymore. Okay. I moved it, and when I put it down, it stopped making that weird noise. And it hasn't made that weird noise again.
Sounds foolproof. You're going to take that one out gigging, are you? Sure, no bad things will happen.
I never need to buy another gigging amp again.
Jay Cross, do you want to tell us about the new Ed Sheeran Martin signature guitar?
Completely. So this is the third Ed Sheeran Martin guitar.
Oh god.
No, I'm not having this.
We can talk about this. So the Patreon content for this week is we're going to discuss that article, the recent article, the slow death of the electric guitar.
Okay.
So we'll get into the politics of Ed Sheeran when we cover that in the Patreon.
Okay.
For now, let's talk about Ed Sheeran's guitar.
Okay.
Just come out.
So I'm sure that once again this will be an extremely successful guitar that will be bought by loads of people who will be buying their first guitar, which is something that Joe Branton apparently isn't into, which is weird considering he's marketing manager for a guitar shop.
Yeah.
You know, not wanting people to start learning guitar. Yeah, but that's, I guess we'll talk about that later.
He hates that.
Anyway, it's great. I think that Ed Sheeran is a really wonderful ambassador for this industry.
Yeah.
You know, sure, I'm probably not going to buy one of these, but it's great that they exist. It really is.
Is there any difference with this model?
The logo is blue instead of green.
Okay. Is it still luminous?
No. It's a bit more of a subtle blue, and it's got a division sign, which I think might be his new...
That's the album logo,
right,
I believe.
Fine. So it's got that on the
so
headstock.
It's not multiplying anymore.
No. Was the other one the...
I think it was an X.
I think you might be right, actually.
No, the original one was like a plus.
Oh, right.
Then there might have been an X. Isn't the new album called like Divided or Divide, I think, which is
I guess
why
maybe.
It's that.
That would
symbol.
Make sense. How but original. Anyway, so... So it's got that. It's a fairly standard spec. So rosewood back and side, Sitka spruce top. It's got Fishman pickup in there. But all of his royalties from this guitar are going to the East Anglia Children's Hospital.
Oh, there we go.
But again,
Joe Brandon's not into that.
Don't ask Joe Brandon for a quote.
I'm
on
not
this.
Into it. No.
So he hates charity. He hates children.
And he hates
Ed Sheeran. Yeah. I mean, one of those is okay.
So yeah, I mean, I'm glad that this is carrying on. I think this will be, I'm sure this will be hugely successful.
Yeah.
As an aside, Ed Sheeran played Glastonbury this week, and I got totally duped into a clickbait article about Ed Sheeran at Glastonbury that said something like, "You'll never believe Ed Sheeran's rider requests for Glastonbury." It made it sound really outrageous and over the top.
Drugs.
And the article, the, it prefixed it by saying,
"Brown M&Ms.
For most people, playing Glastonbury is a once in a lifetime experience. You know, some people are, in the past, people have asked for doves, and some people have asked for hot tubs. Ed Sheeran's contained a six pack of Diet Coke, a six pack of regular Coke, a six pack of Fanta, and a six pack of Sprite." That was his rider request.
That good. Is a lot of sugar. Like, that is a huge amount of sugar.
He probably plays a 2-hour set or something by himself, you know.
He needs all that. He needs all
that. Yeah. Oh, sorry, that wasn't it. There was also a bottle of Robinson squash and some Manuka honey. Those are the other bits on there. Goodness knows what he's running on, but you know.
I'm into it. No booze, just a good old boy.
So, but yeah, there we go. So, yeah, cool. Good on him.
New Ed Sheeran model. I'm sure will be snapped up by Ed Sheeran fans and collectors.
The first one, which came out, I think, in 2013.
They're just to clarify, they're just Martin LX1s, aren't they?
As far as I'm aware. Yeah. I mean, it might be a slightly different pickup, but it's basically a Martin LX1. So it's a small body. It's great. But the first one that came out, my word, I'd never seen a furore around a new product. You know, you think people get excited when Boss drop a new expression pedal or a new delay pedal. The absolute stampede of parents that we got in the shop when the LX1E was announced was just absolutely ridiculous. There was like a 9-month wait on them or something. They got delayed. So hopefully they've got it sorted this time.
Hopefully they've learned their lesson. Welcome this time around. Joe Branton.
See.
Can you tell me about the new Reverend Guitars Matt West signature model?
Yeah, I can. Actually, yeah. It's pretty good.
good.
Right.
Thanks.
Right. You're a little bit out of this, aren't you? You're a little bit out of the swing of this.
No, it's fine. I don't like Reverend Guitars, but I've been given this.
You're this an idiot. This is an incredible looking guitar.
It's a good looking guitar, yeah. If you're not really into guitars at all, then
no,
I think Reverend.
I'm not having this because, firstly, Reverend guitars are great.
They are great, they're really well made guitars. This is cool. It's cool. So, following Reverend's kind of more standard shape, that kind of offset. Jaguar-esque shape, but it, you know, they have that kind of jagged sort of Italian 70s thing to them a little bit, don't they? That's sort of the body shape that they're going for this guitar. Single P90 in the bridge.
Of course, best.
Now, that is what's cool about this guitar. That is great. Maple neck with a reverse sort of Strat-style headstock. Well, the Reverend version of that headstock. But love, like, the reverse headstock looks great. Maple neck, super cool. Available in like butterscotch or black. The black might be matte as well. I'm not sure. And torque guards on both. Only thing I'm not that into is it is a trem. And you guys were telling me that this fellow is in a pop punk band.
He's in Neck Deep, I believe.
Which is, they are pop punk.
They're a British pop punk band. Right. From East Anglia, actually.
Joe Brand hates this already.
I don't think they are from East Anglia. Right.
But still, trem is such a weird thing for pop punk. That's like actually the last thing I would think you need on a guitar.
It seems especially strange being on a guitar with a single P90, you know, which seems to me as if this looks like the ultimate rhythm guitarist's guitar, except for the trem. It's a really weird Wilkinson trem as well.
Yeah, it is a really unusual looking unit, but if it just had a hardtail, I think they'd sell buckets loads of these. But it does make it very, very specific.
I'm tempted to get one of these.
They have made it cool by adding pinlock tuners, which I think are an essential by today's standards for. Like, you see them on loads of guitars where people down-tune a lot, and I think it really makes a massive difference. They're pinlock tuners, if you don't know, listeners, are the small locking addition to the back of a headstock tuner, and I think they make the world of difference. Super cool. comes with Reverend Standard Bass Contour Control, that additional sort of passive bass roll-off that they have, which is pretty cool. Carina Body, which is...
Is
quite
it?
Unusual, yeah. Mm. Which I'm quite into. That's that's pretty swag. And of course, after my own namesake, a bow night to nut.
Amazing.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't know why that's a feature.
People have heard now that the bow rules, and they're now adding bow night.
God damn.
Have you got bonitis?
God damn. Yeah, so yeah, really cool, dead simple punk rock guitar, except for the trem. But
this totally appeals to me, though. So things are like single P90s in the bridge, excellent. Yes. Maple boards, excellent, which is something you never find with P90s. Reverse headstock, love that. Love the body shape. I'm not so into the trem, but I can live with that. I can live with that. That's fine. Those Wilkinson trems are really good. I'm kind of tempted to get this.
This is great. They are...
Which colour?
It does look great.
Oh, the Butterscotch, 100%. Not the
only
black
thing,
one.
The only thing that I'm not really into with the with either of them, actually...
Tortoiseshell scratch plate.
Well, there is that. But, you know, I can kind of take it or leave it.
Tortoiseshell.
I'm not really into the reverse pickup. So the black pickup being on the Butterscotch and the Butterscotch being on the black. I think if they'd gone, like... black on black, that would have been very cool.
No, I'm into both. I'd like exactly that way around. I don't think pickup should be the same colour as the body. That looks weird.
Maybe.
No, the cream pickup on the black body looks fantastic.
Looks super swag.
I'm not into the tall guard at all.
Well, it's
didn't think you would be. It is definitely a cool guitar. Reverend, again, sort of hitting it out of the park and showing they are really a company that are making... cracking guitars at reasonable prices. They remind me so much of, like, just the, because they're producing vintage-esque stuff at with modern twists that's really high quality. That seems to me to be exactly the same thing that Music Man have really started focusing on.
Yeah,
the difference, Music Man guitars cost $2,000.
Yeah,
I know that there's a reason for that, and don't get me wrong, I know that I appreciate handmade American guitars are very different from these Chinese built.
They are Korean built.
Korean built. But nonetheless, I think I wish Reverend did a guitar that I like the look of, because I love everything about...
I'm so tempted to get either one of these or the Tele style guitar they do, which I've completely forgotten.
The Buckshot.
The Buckshot.
Oh, even the name
so
is good.
So good.
Yeah,
so
totally
good.
Cool. I'm not into this bass control. Like, you
know, it's great.
No one has any problem with tone shaping on guitars. Like, that's not a problem you need to fix.
You just hate tone controls. You just hate them in general. I think this year will be the year that I buy a Reverend guitar.
That would be...
I really, really want to buy one.
I hope you do.
Good. And maybe I will, Joe Branton, just to spite you.
Do you know what else is cool in the guitar world?
The TC Electronic Flashback 2 Delay. Jay Cross, tell me about it.
I wasn't going to say that.
I thought what you were...
Yeah, it wasn't a segue. It was a guitar thing. So
it was a tangent.
You know, I was off work because I was in the studio. I came back into work to see what, like, stuff was new at work, what things had a look at the little list of things that had been bought in, and I came across 81 Steinberger guitars.
I'm out.
81 Steinberger.
What?
Yeah. I think
are you allowed to talk about this?
I thought you meant here. You'd bought in a 1981 Steinberger guitar.
We bought in 81 Steinberger guitars. 81.
Are you sure these aren't embargoed?
No, they're not embargoed because they're like existing models. I think we've got... They're ludicrous prices. I'm not using this podcast to...
What, cheap?
Yeah, exactly. Super cheap, but they're like
where
six
have they
models.
Have Gibson just found them under the stairs
or something?
Yeah,
I don't know. It was so random. I was like, what? Why have we got all of these? And it was like, oh, because they were a great price. It was like, it's like six different models, but 81 in
Are there any of the ZT3, the one with the trans trim?
There were some with trems on them.
Those are because the trans trim was the one, the model that
it's
you
the
could...
It's the really bonkers one.
It's the one where you could... You apply pressure to the tremolo arm, and then you can lock it in place, so you can quickly change key. Do you not remember this?
That's so
nuts.
That's what the trans does, transposing the guitar.
Yeah, trans. So you can,
that's amazing.
You can go either way, forward or back, and it was a nuts.
It's like
number of tones that you could go up or down.
It was
by.
like two tones either way, something like that.
I think it was more than that.
No, it wasn't. You couldn't do that.
Bonkers. Yeah. But it was proper like, and then you lock it in and then all of a sudden it's
I love it. That's amazing. I'm going to have to do a video on one. I'm going to have to find one.
You can only use strings specifically for that guitar.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, complete nightmare.
Yeah, double ball end.
I think we should move on.
Listeners, if you haven't seen a Steinberg or if you are unfamiliar with the brand, please Google it. It'll be good.
Jay Cross, tell me about the TC Electronic Flashback 2 delay at the second pedal in 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, so following on from the new line of TC pedals, the new generation, I guess, after seeing the Hall of Fame 2 a few weeks back, and then this is the second one with this mash control.
It is.
So I haven't seen one of these in real life yet, or the Hall of Fame 2. So I'm really interested to see how the mash control works. But Flashback 2, again, just a very similar update to like we got with the Hall of Fame 2. A couple of extra delay sounds in there, a crystal delay, which is a shimmer delay. They've got that on there, and there's now three tone print options on this as opposed to just the one.
That's cool.
But yeah, the big thing about it is it's got the mash control, and I tell you, the video that TC put out for this is fantastic. It looks and sounds absolutely wonderful. The mash control, I think, will probably take some getting used to. I'm really interested to see how it works, because it's a pressure sensitive foot switch that will do different things depending on what delay you're on. So they say that when you're on the 2290, which is the old the traditional TC, the heritage delay, I guess, it acts as a hold function. When you're using an analog sound, it will oscillate the tape.
That's great. So
there's all sorts of different things that it will do.
This sounds banging.
It was really cool, and it's pressure sensitive, so you put your foot on it, and the harder you hold down on it, the more it will control that sound. So the oscillation will go really crazy if you really. But my concern is it's all done from the same foot switch. If you misjudge your pressure, you might just turn it off.
I assume they've done lots of testing with that to find the right pressure.
It's all just on a single soft switch.
Imagine if you just like step on it, expecting to like just turn it. No, to like. Do your grand oscillation at the end of the song and then turn it off.
That is kind of the weird thing with this. I'm like, I appreciate them obviously wanting to fit them into the same chassis, but it's a great idea.
It's a great idea,
but if they'd just made it a double foot switch, I'd be like, this is a great idea, I want to get one.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm going to have to actually check.
They've got the chassis, you know, because we've seen the two button chassis that we've seen with like the Ditto X2, and so I wouldn't be surprised if they did a two button version of this. But yeah, I don't know, I'm into it. They also announced today a Sub and Up Mini.
Couple days ago.
No, I think it was.
Do you like the Sub and Up? Is that?
Well, no, but name.
No.
No, I do.
No,
but the Sub and Up is a micropog. The micropog is the best octave pedal you can get. And the problem with the micropog is it's relatively sizable.
Yeah.
So yeah, they just released a Sub and Up Mini.
Oh yes.
Which is I've not seen a huge amount of info on it. It's only got three knobs rather than the four. So you've only got controls for
the dry signal, high and low,
rather than high, low, dry, and low two, which is what you've got on the normal Sub and Up, and it's fully tone print. So you can apparently they've got a number of different. So you've got polyphonic and monophonic, which you can switch between. So
right. Okay.
Yeah, again, sounds cool. It just seems my only concern with TC is it doesn't seem to be. The products are sort of all over the place.
They are now, yeah, because it used to be a real like coherent range.
Completely.
And now it's like, well, they've got the cheap stuff, and then they've got some like new
some upgrades
of the tone print series.
Yeah.
And then they've got like some mini pedals.
Well, the minis appear to be that appears to be an ongoing series that they just release every now and again, you know, because we saw the Hypergravity and we saw the Mimic Doubler, and then they've done all of the other small ones, and then there's the second generation pedals, and then there's also the new pedals like the tremolo from the tremolo from last week, the surfy one.
Oh yeah, yeah. Which is back into the Tone Print series.
Yeah, completely. So it's just there's stuff happening all over the shop.
Yeah,
it seems really
weird. Releasing
a
lot of pedals as well. I'd forgotten about the Trem.
Yeah, that was only last week.
Yeah, and then the week before that was the Hall of Fame
two. Yeah. So at least four pedals in 3 weeks.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
So, and we're not even at NAMM yet.
I know. Not even at Summer NAMM.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Summer NAMM is only, where are we? 3 weeks away?
Summer NAMM.
Sorry.
What? What was that?
I was saying.
Do that again?
Summer NAMM.
So weird.
So, but yeah, so have you, I don't know, are these, have the Hall of Fame 2s hit the market yet? Do you know?
Have you got them in stock? I don't think so.
Okay.
Because I haven't been asked to promote them.
Okay.
Yeah. It's equally likely that I missed the email.
Right, okay.
sounds more likely, if anything.
I'm really interested to try this mash function. Because the video, and don't get me wrong, I'm not of the sort of quality that of a guitar player that they use on the TC demo videos, but it looks fantastic. It sounds really cool, so yeah, I'm into it. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Cool. With that, do you know what, we're up at time. No time for questions this week. So much
Goodness
going
me.
On with
holy moly
return of Bo Banton.
Who?
And loads of new boss stuff, just so much crammed into one episode. So we are going to wrap this up, but we are also going to head over to our Patreon episode.
We're
going to talk about an article that
we're
going
to set.
Are we going to set some
homework, some reading?
We are
some prior reading.
So perhaps before you listen to the Patreon episode, go and check out. And I forget where
Washington
it was.
Washington Post.
The Washington Post. The slow death of the electric guitar.
Worst article ever.
Do go and read that. We're going to discuss that on this week's Patreon episode. patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're from as little as $1 a month. You can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you access to the regular episode ad free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half
an
hour. Yeah. Yeah, you get it early. You usually get it the night before the regular one goes out, which means you have it for work the next day, whereas the other one goes up at 9 o'clock. So if you have, you will have missed the commute on that day. So patreon.com/guitar nerds. Get it for your commute. $5 a month gets you access to the regular episode ad-free and early, plus you get the extra half an hour, plus you get access to the entire back catalogue, including the mini-series Joe Branton's Rant On, the upcoming series Gear of Yesteryear. Plus, I think Patreon just announced the whole new load of features. They're not out just yet. They're kind of testing stuff. But I think we're going to do some more stuff for that tier. There's access to like exclusive live streams.
Oh, I didn't know about this.
Yeah, there's loads of new stuff. We need to talk about this and make some plans. But yeah, I think when we do it, that'll be on the $5. Maybe like you can have your own forum and stuff like that at $5, and we'll work something out. But so lots of good stuff at the $5 tier. Do check that out. For $10, you get your name read out on the regular episode every week, like this.
Oh, how have you guys been doing this?
I've been doing the themes. Been doing the beats, and Jay's been doing the better rhymes.
Oh, that's nice. How was it, Jay?
Oh, it was good.
It's fine.
Yeah, it was good. When you say Colin Anderson's name, though, say Colin and then give it a break and then say Colin Anderson.
Okay.
I kind of like it.
Colin Anderson.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a really nice sounding name. I hadn't really thought about it before.
Okay.
Derek Ridge, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Michael Blair, Tom's Gardner, Manager, Andrew Macro, Mark Cross, J.D. Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will Glass, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anderson, Bill Craddock, Colin Anderson.
I don't know what that music was. You were looking at me as if I was supposed to know.
It was the Degeneration X theme tune.
Oh.
Break it down. That one.
Okay.
You can also follow this madness over on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds. You can go and follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Joe Branton and I will be going to Milan.
Are we going to Milan?
In a couple of days to go to a very exclusive Yamaha event. So we'll be putting some footage from that up
over
on the YouTube channel. Joe representing GAC. me representing you guys, the listener.
Speaking of Yamaha, just very briefly, and you know, not that I'm here to. Well, actually, I do appear to be here to put money in the pockets of our competition. But did you see the rig rundown by Premier Guitar of
Billy Sheehan
and
I don't watch that trash.
Gilbo, Paul yeah. Gilbo.
Yeah, I did. I saw part of Billy Sheehan's one because Yamaha uploaded it, but
yeah.
They only showed his new bass.
Right, okay.
And I only care about his rig now. His new Hartley rig looks absolutely crazy. He's upped it to 4 LH1000 heads. That's 4,000 watts.
No need.
The start of the start of the video is worth watching because it's Paul Gilbert showing off. He's got I don't know if he uses this live. I assume he does, which is why he was showing it. He's got a guitar that only has 3 strings on it, and all of them are tuned to E.
Of course, that's what we need.
And it's
E, E's are good.
It's on its own stand. Like, the guitar is attached to a guitar stand.
So he just sort of strums it.
And no. He can just throw his other guitar behind his back and just go over and just start playing this one when he needs to. It's
nice.
Very weird. It sounded great, though.
I'm sure we'll put some pictures from that in the Facebook group. Facebook.com/...
What if he's there, Joe?
Groups.
I believe he is.
/guitar nerds forum. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Farewell.
Cheers, gang.